And is it Ms. Bitsis? Good morning to you. Do either of you have any questions before we begin?
I do not, Your Honor.
Then, Mr. Bruno, you may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Jason Bruno, here on behalf of Defendant Kay Anderson. Mr. Anderson is sitting in the front row along with his wife behind us. We're here today asking this court to reverse the criminal convictions below for property maintenance code violations. We believe there are many, many reasons why this court can and should reverse the decision. They are outlined in our briefings, but I'm going to try to cover a couple today if time permits. The first reason, I think, is the biggest one. All of the charges, the inspections, and the evidence below were based entirely upon an inspection warrant that was conclusively declared invalid. It was declared invalid because it didn't comply with the authorizing inspection statute, Nebraska Revised Statute Section 29832, and it was procured by fraud. The county court was initially correct in excluding all evidence obtained from that warning under the fruit of the poisonous tree. There are high school students in here that take a business law class. I'm sure they are familiar with that term. The case should have ended there a long time ago, and we believe the court doesn't need to go any farther.
The fruit of the poisonous tree is a Fourth Amendment doctrine, correct?
Correct.
But your motion to suppress was not based on the Fourth Amendment. It was based on a state statute.
I think it was based on both, because the state statute is one of the protections that arises out of the Fourth Amendment.
But the Fourth Amendment doesn't require the state seeking the warrant to obtain consent. That's a requirement imposed by state law, correct?
I disagree. I think the Fourth Amendment 100% requires.
In every case, the Fourth Amendment requires the state to get the consent of the Fourth Amendment tracks the Nebraska statute in all cases?
I think the Fourth Amendment requires probable cause and a warrant to inspect a search.
But the probable cause is different than the Nebraska statute you're relying on that requires consent.
Sure, I think the Nebraska statute is an expansion of the Fourth Amendment rights. The Fourth Amendment rights just set a floor. The Nebraska statute sets a higher bar. So that was one of the basis for our motions to disperse.
So does the Nebraska statute say anything about use of the exclusionary rule?
It does not, but I think that falls under there because the fact remains is the warrant itself was declared invalid. So the same concept applies.
So the source of the, what is the source of the exclusionary rule in jurisprudence?
The constitutional rights, the Bill of Rights, the Fourth Amendment.
So it's based on precedent, not a statute. Is that right? Is it a remedy that
I think
was issued by courts rather than under a particular statute?
I think the foundation for it arises under both the United States Constitution and the Nebraska Constitution, and I think that was enhanced by the statute. I don't think anyone has ever interpreted the statutes, but it's plain and crystal clear, and it required the city to go get Mr. Anderson's consent before they could search these properties. The city knew that, and that's one of the reasons why they lied to the court in obtaining the warrant and said, hey, we complied with this statute. We went out and tried to get Kay Anderson's consent, which wasn't true. So I think the problem that we fell into in this case is the lower court said, well, Kay Anderson doesn't have standing. We disagree with that. I think that's contradictory for one. On one hand, you can't sit there and say, well, Kay Anderson, we're holding you criminally responsible for the maintenance of the entire apartment complex, including as a term of his probation, while simultaneously saying, well, wait a minute, Mr. Anderson, you don't have standing or sufficient interest in that same apartment complex to challenge illegal searches or seizures or to invoke a statute that is specifically designed to give you protections.
So you don't dispute in the context of this case that Mr. Anderson is the person responsible or maintenance at the subject property?
I agree that he is the maintenance person. I don't believe he is the person responsible. I don't think that determination could be made. I think if you
look at... Was he negotiating with the inspectors as the person responsible? Do we have evidence of that in our record?
He was communicating with the inspectors, certainly. He certainly was, but I think you have to look at the Omaha Municipal Code Section 1-11 because that actually defines what's supposed to happen here. What they're supposed to do is they're supposed to charge the corporation. There's supposed to be a trial, During that trial, the court is supposed to decide who the responsible person is, and only then, and after then, could they charge a single, an individual in this case. But going beyond that, and I'm getting ahead of myself, but how would Mr. Anderson know he was being held criminally responsible here? The notices weren't directed to him. The notices didn't mention his name. They never told him they were going after him. The only time Mr. Anderson found out that he was being responsible for the property of another is when he read about it in the press after he was criminally charged. That was after the 90 days had already been passed. So what they did in this...
Can I ask you a question about those violation notices?
Sure, you may.
You don't dispute that those violation notices were properly served on A&B Realty?
I 100% dispute that. There was not evidence in the record that those notices were sufficiently served upon anyone or when. Did my client stumble upon them at some time? Yes. But if you look at I think it's the Greenwald case or the other mailbox rule cases cited in my brief, they didn't establish the sufficient foundation to show that those were properly placed in a U.S. post office box, that they had sufficient mail, or when they were served. And why that's critical in this case, because this was all about timing. In order to charge somebody with a crime, they have to prove that he didn't do it within a certain time frame. They never established when the clock started to run against Mr. Anderson or anyone, because they never established in the record when the notices were served or that sufficient service was perfected in this case. So I think the city failed to meet their burden of proof, and that's one of the arguments. But going back to the standing arguments, I think the lower court's decision nullifies Nebraska Revised Statute Section 29832 and Omaha Municipal Code Sections 48, 33, and 34. Which require notice to the landlord, consent by the landlord, and a warrant to search upon probable cause if they couldn't otherwise obtain consent. Everything the city did in this case was designed for one purpose, to get Kay Anderson. He was mentioned 13 times in the warrant application.
Could the consent requirement be met if the city got consent from a tenant of a individual unit?
That's arguable, but I could tell you that didn't happen in this case. I think it's undisputed that the city didn't get consent from anyone, and there's certainly no evidence in the record that they got consent from the tenant.
But you seem to be arguing that it's clear from the statute that the consent has to be obtained from Mr. Anderson, and the statute doesn't actually speak as to whom consent has to be obtained from, correct?
Maybe the statute, but the Omaha Municipal Code section specifically require it to be obtained from the landlord, and the reason is because there was...
Which section, sir?
Skip my page. 33 and or 34, and the reason is because those ordinances were modified based on a federal consent decree, because the city was engaging in abusive practices by going and getting consent from the tenant without ever notifying the landlord.
We have those municipal code provisions in the appellate record?
Yes, we do.
Thank you.
Yeah, they're certainly cited therein. But in this case, I mean, look what happened here. The city completely ignored a statute. They ignored their own ordinances requiring consent. They obtained a false and fraudulent warrant, and what happened? They were rewarded for it. The lower courts got this backwards.
But from your previous answer to Justice Stacy's question about the ordinances being in the record, you said yes, but then you sort of qualified it. Are there verbatim copies of the ordinances in our appellate record?
That I can't tell you offhand. I would assume we put them in, but I'm not 100% certain. I'm fairly certain there is, but I can't give you a guarantee. I could follow up and let you know, but I don't think that matters, because I think the court could take judicial notice of them, because they are laws.
Of a municipal ordinance?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're public records. But in this case, I still don't even think they're, and if they don't put them in the record, then the city or the state can't meet their burden of proof, because how else would you meet the elements unless you establish what they are through the Omaha Municipal Code sections? So if they're not in the record and the court thinks that's a flaw, then they should reverse and dismiss the case on that ground. But the bottom line here is, and I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal, is what are we doing here? Kay Anderson complied with a schedule that was implemented by the Property Maintenance Appeal Board and agreed upon by the city. Not only did they complete the repairs in time, they did it early. He complied with the agreement with the city, the orders of the PMA Bay, of the Property Maintenance Appeal Board, and the city has admitted that 90 to 120 days wasn't a reasonable time to perform these repairs. Without that, there can't be any conviction because nothing criminal happened here. So I'll save the remainder of my time, the little I have, for rebuttal, unless there's any questions.
Well, I'm sorry to do this to you.
No problem.
But I have a question.
Sure.
Could Mr. Anderson, if the record suggested he had been asked for consent to search any of the property in this apartment complex, could he have given valid consent to search the leased premises?
Well, I certainly think he can. Yeah, and the reason he could have, because if you look through the leases, which we put in the record as part of our renewed motion to suppress, that was one of the things that allowed K. Anderson and AB Realty access under certain conditions. I think that would be one of them. So I think he could give valid consent to those apartments as an agent for AB Realty because they own the property and they have the right to do certain things. So yes, I think he could. So with that, I'll conclude unless anyone has any other questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Ms. Bitches.
Okay, please the court. Good morning. My name is Lindsay Bitzes. I'm an assistant city prosecutor with the City of Omaha. I'm representing the state of Nebraska, the appellee defendant. Appellant assigned 6 assignments of errors. I'm going to address them more succinctly in 2. First, the sufficiency of the evidence claim, and second, the standing. The evidence was sufficient in this case. You're aware of the standard, and a rational trier of fact did find the evidence to be sufficient to find Anderson guilty of the 4 counts of Omaha Municipal Code 4853. That ordinance requires the defendant, an owner or person responsible, may be charged if he or she fails to comply with a notice within 90 days.
How do we know what a person responsible is under the Omaha Municipal Code from our record?
It is one of the exhibits offered, Your Honor. We did provide that to the trial court. I don't have the exact ordinance number offhand, but it does provide an owner or person responsible. There should be a general definition of person responsible.
When you say you provided it, is a verbatim copy of the ordinance an exhibit in our appellate record?
A certified copy of the exhibit was offered to the trial court.
Of the section that is alleged to have been violated.
And additional sections of the city ordinance. We offered a number of certified copies of city ordinances, various ones.
In the Bill of Exceptions in front of us, can you point us to what exhibit number you are referring?
I cannot at this time. I do not have the exact exhibit number. Where it defines the owner or person responsible, but I think we can use reasonableness to determine a person responsible, and to that I'll get into the evidence. Mr. Anderson purchased the property in 2007. He then transferred that property to AB Realty LLC, of which he was a member, registered agent, as well as a manager. He then had the deed upon filing sent to his address. Defendant Anderson held himself out to be an owner. He worked with maintenance individuals. He spoke with the planning department regarding violations. He provided permission for individuals to hang flyers at the property. He had an office at the property. He received a stack of maintenance complaints in August of 2018 and admitted he'd been lackadaisical in fixing those issues, again, taking responsibility.
Is there some alternative to Mr. Anderson as the actual owner of this property?
Well, AB Realty is registered on the deed, Your Honor, and appellant referenced Section 1-11, which provides that a corporation may be charged under the Omaha Municipal Code. However, the last sentence...
Is there another person behind this other than Mr. Anderson?
His wife is also an owner, Your Honor.
Is this a corporation?
It is an LLC, yes.
Is that the same thing?
It's a limited liability corporation.
Is that what our statutes call a limited liability company? Do you think under state statutes, that a limited liability company is a form of a corporation?
I personally don't think that, Your Honor.
All right. Well, let me ask another question.
Okay.
You've gone through a litany of Mr. Anderson's connections with this. How does that square with the finding that he lacked standing?
Your Honor, these positions are not inconsistent at all. Criminal law is well settled by this court and the United States Supreme Court that somebody may be charged with a crime while also lacking standing to object to a search. There's no evidence that Mr. Anderson had a reasonable expectation of privacy in leased premises, and there is a litany of case law that goes to that. I can cite some of it if you'd prefer. But Mr. Anderson failed to present any evidence that he had a reasonable expectation of privacy at the first hearing at the county court level. The state then petitioned for further review to the district court. We were successful at the district court, or court found Mr. Anderson did nothing to maintain any privacy rights in these leased apartments. The second motion to suppress, Mr. Anderson's wife testified that Mr. Anderson maintains the property, that he has a key pursuant to a lease, and that he occasionally goes there for social gatherings. None of that is enough to establish a reasonable expectation of privacy and property, and I certainly don't think that even if he feels he had a subjective interest, certainly not something society is prepared to recognize as reasonable. In fact, that'd be a slippery slope. There's ample case law that the police may not search a residence simply on the consent of a landlord. And if that were the case, police would go to a landlord and request consent to search property were able to.
The motion to press here was based on a state statute, correct?
The initial motion to suppress on the 29-832?
Right.
Yes, Your Honor. And
whose privacy rights does that statute protect?
It doesn't actually provide who it protects, the owner or the tenant. I would argue it'd be the owner only if the premises are not leased, and that again would just go to the reasonable expectation of privacy. I think you have to read those hand in hand.
So who would have standing to object to a search under the statute, assuming the exclusionary rule even applies?
The tenants, the individual with a reasonable expectation of privacy in the location searched.
Or the owner? Not the owner?
No, not the owner.
Let me back up. What was on the criminal complaint, who was named, who was charged? What was charged?
Kay Anderson was charged.
No more, no less.
No more, no less.
So how does that reflect or ignore or recognize the existence of the form of business, the LLC?
Well, because, Your Honor, the Omaha Municipal Code, Section 1-11, that's already been cited, if you go to the very last sentence, it says, nothing in this ordinance shall relieve an agent or member from being criminally prosecuted if he or she fails to comply. In this case, we can't charge, we certainly could have made a decision to charge an LLC, but in this case, Mr. Anderson, for all intents and purposes, is the LLC with his wife, and he was the one maintaining the property or not maintaining the property. He was the one who did not have a reasonable expectation.
Were there
privacy.
Other members?
He failed to comply.
Were there other members of the LLC?
No, Your Honor.
It's a one member.
Two.
It's a two-member LLC.
Yes, Your Honor.
I seem to recall in the appellant's brief a reference to the LLC changing at some point, and that there was only one member, and that one member was Mrs. Anderson.
Yes, Your Honor, that did.
That seems a little inconsistent with what you're telling us here, and I just want to be sure I understand the record and your representation of it.
Yes, Your Honor, the evidence that was presented by the state at trial offered the Articles of Incorporation, and that provided two members. The appellant offered testimony of Ms. Anderson that she had removed her husband from the documents as a manager, not a member, and that she had removed him as a manager simply for estate planning purposes. They had indicated they were going to provide a certified copy of that document to the trial court.
Did anybody offer amended articles?
No, Your Honor. And the trial court further said that he would not receive that exhibit if it was not received as a certified copy. It was never received. So we have Ms. Anderson's testimony that she removed Mr. Anderson from the LLC as manager only for the purposes of estate planning, and that the record does reflect that testimony.
Thanks.
Manager and member are not the same. We can agree to that, right?
We would.
So I will break this down just for simplifying it. Who, under the state's theory, who owns the property?
AB Realty is the owner. Mr. Anderson's the person responsible.
Okay, he's the person responsible, and how do you make that connection? Why is he responsible?
He lived on the property. He held himself out as landlord. He told people he was the owner. He had keys to the property. His wife testified he maintained the property. He hired a contractor to clean up the property.
So is he like the maintenance man, or is he the super of the building? What is he?
I would say he's the owner, Your Honor, but in the deed, it says AB Realty is the owner, but I would use them interchangeably. I would call him the owner and landlord.
Is he the agent of the
lot? He's also an agent, yes.
The law doesn't allow us to slop around in those terms the way you're suggesting, though.
No, it doesn't, which is why I called him the person responsible, and I said that the owner is AB Realty LLC.
Could you have charged the LLC and Mr. Anderson and his wife?
I believe so. It appears that my time is up. I'm going to ask that you affirm the decision, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal, so counsel, you are excused. And the court will go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Harms. But before we begin that, let's